Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
There's a great anecdote that John Maxwell uses in his leadership book. And one of the things he talks about is Bob. He said if Bob has a problem with Sue, and Bob has a problem with Tom, and Bob has a problem with George, then perhaps Bob is the problem. Well, what if you're Bob? What if you're the problem? And see, the leader who has no self-awareness, who doesn't understand how their life impacts everybody else, that leader is like a relational wrecking ball inside an organization. That's what I want to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast, and I have to admit, I have been that wrecking ball, unintentionally. I mean, it wasn't like I set out to be the wrecking ball. There was a particular job that I had. I was actually invited to be a part of this launch company. They hired me because I was a vendor to the company that was kind of the skeleton of putting it all together. And when they hired me to come on board, they told me what they wanted me to do, and I set out like a bulldog. I bit into that task, and I took off, and I did exactly what they wanted me to do, and they were very impressed with the success that I had. But in case you haven't noticed, after watching, I don't know how long you've been watching, we had 4 new subscribers this month on YouTube. Woohoo! That's like huge for us, because since they took away the 10,000 we had, we haven't got over 180 yet. So 4 is like enormous for, yeah, I know that's sad, but true. But see, the idea that I'm a little bit tenacious, a little bit opinionated, a little bit hard-headed. Well, that's been true all my life. And when I took this new job, they set me on this task and I tore into that task. But see, along the way of tearing into that task, I also learned a lot. I learned a lot about the industry. I learned a lot about the business of what they had asked us to do. I learned about how it works and how it doesn't work, and how there, even then, and this has been a minute ago, more than 2 decades ago, and even then it was obvious that there are certain players who kind of manipulate and control the whole process. And if you're not careful, they'll manipulate and control you too. And I had kind of figured that out along the way. And in one particular board meeting, somebody was kind of throwing out these idioms and axioms, and I said, but that's not true. And we got into a loud argument over it in a board meeting. And later I was called into the CEO's office where he said, listen, I need to tell you, this gentleman came to me, and he's been in the industry for a long, long time. And although he's a big physical guy in stature, he said he was afraid you were going to jump across the table and rip his head off. He was terrified, literally, mortally scared. And I thought, grow up. See, at that moment, I was Bob. I was the problem, and I didn't recognize I was the problem. I didn't have my attitude in check. I just had an opinion that I wore on my sleeve, and I was very clear about what that opinion was. And in the moment that my opinion was tested, I had all kinds of evidence for why I had my opinion. I just didn't have any tact, couth, professionalism, a spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down. I didn't have any of that. I had my opinion, I had my facts, and I was ready to bring them to war. To war. Something I recently heard from Dr. Jordan Peterson, when I say recently, I mean like in the last couple of months. He said the problem with a lot of people is they see people on the other side, so to speak, those with whom they disagree, as enemies rather than opponents. I thought, well, there's not really much of a difference, is there? Dr. Jordan Peterson, clinical psychiatrist for decades now, went on to explain that when you see someone as an enemy, you want to destroy them. Their survival means your demise. And by survival, I don't just mean getting out of this game alive. I mean, they don't get out at all. An opponent, on the other hand, is like that person you have coffee with on Monday and meet on the racquetball court on Tuesday, or the volleyball court, or the tennis court, or the basketball court, or the football field, or whatever it is, and you war against each other for the time of that game, You win or you lose. And at the end of the day, you shake hands, you dust your feet off, and you go on about life. That's an opponent. That's not an enemy. You see, back in my early days, I didn't recognize the difference then at all. And if you came against my ideas, you made yourself my enemy. And I would overwhelm you with facts and browbeating. And I would make you feel small until I won. Humiliation. Oh, it's not bad enough to do that in a board meeting, though. I did it at home. I did it with my friends. I did it with my wife, with my children. That's not good leadership. Now, I can say it's been like 3 decades since this event happened, and I wish that I could say that it never happened again, that I grew up and all of a sudden I was a great, kind, and gracious guy, and I'd be lying if I said that, and I'd still be Bob, the problem. But I did learn along the way that self-awareness is a big, big deal in leadership. And self-awareness a lot of times has to do with being able to look in the mirror and go, am I the jerk? Did I say the wrong thing? Did I do the wrong thing? Did I say something when the best thing to say would have been nothing? I believe it was Bill Ingvall who wrote the song, I Should Have Shut Up. Yeah, that's really good advice for some leaders. Just stop talking, because everything else that you say from right here might just dig a deeper hole, hurt more feelings, destroy more relationships, burn more bridges. So stop while you're ahead or while you still have one. It's not a good idea to continue to burn bridges and bully people just because you're getting your way. Those are not enemies. Those are opponents. And just because they oppose you in the moment doesn't mean they won't be your greatest allies in the near future. Many times, opponents have turned to rally together because there's a greater cause to fight for than there is to fight against each other. Now, the challenge as a leader is finding those people who you are willing to trust to speak into your ear, to tell you when you're wrong. I walked out of that meeting after being chastised, scolded, put in my place. And I went about my life for the next several weeks very quietly, very stoically, cautious to offend or harm or insult anybody. Nobody heard a word from me, not an opinion, not a thought, not a fact, not a nothing. I did my job. I came in the door when I had to. I did my job. I went out the door when I could. For a couple of weeks, maybe 3. And then the CEO called me back into his office. And he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm doing my job without causing any problems. He said, I had no idea how much influence you had in this workplace. That you being quiet in the corner is not you. Your energy drives so much attitude and behavior in this workplace. I can't have you completely disengaged. Pause for a moment and think about how many studies you've seen in the last couple of years, 2019 to 2024, where people are reporting that they're 60% disengaged while at work. They're playing with their social media. They're swiping right. They're looking for a new job. They're following the local trends and the hottest trends on whatever platform. But they're not deeply engaged in work. I was deeply engaged in work. I was not deeply engaged in the culture of work. Those are two totally different things. One is about getting the productivity done. I was getting the productivity done. I was not engaging with the team, with the culture. I was not involved socially with the people who had to work around me. And that intentional self-isolation made me feel like I had a little more control of not getting myself in trouble. But I had no idea, nor did the CEO at that time, what kind of ripple effect that would have. And he said, you know, since you've gone dark, so to speak, silent, since you've gone stealth, there are a whole lot of people that think that the company's going under, that we're closing the doors, that something's wrong. I can't have that. I need your cheery, peppy self. And I said, do you want me to shut up or do you want me to talk? He said, I want you to talk. I just want you to talk about the right things. I want you to encourage people and build them up. And I'm like, that is so not me. He said, well, learn. See, part of being a leader, being a person of influence, is understanding that the thoughts and the attitudes in the heart of you impact people around you. And you've got to have trusted people who can criticize you without you taking offense, who can criticize you, who can correct you, who can chastise you when necessary. People that you trust that you don't immediately go, oh, they're just haters. They're just jealous of my success. They say those negative things about me because they wish it was them. There may be some truth to that, and it may just be you're being a jerk. And if you can't distinguish the two, then you lack self-awareness. And if you're not willing to listen to other people who will speak into your life and say, you shouldn't have said it like that, you might ought to consider something else. If you're not willing to listen to people who you respect to correct you, then you will probably remain a jerk. It requires self-awareness. Now, there are going to be those who are going to criticize you, and it's unwarranted, and it's unmerited. And one of the first things you have got to do is learn how to measure the balance between criticism and the qualified nature of the person giving it. Because there's a chance, there really is a chance, that somebody will come to you and say, you know, I realize you've done this task differently. And they've never done that task. They don't have a clue. They don't know how to do the job. They don't like the outcome that you got. They don't like the process you went about. They don't even like the attitude that you had when you did it. But they've never done it, so they don't have any idea what that's like. It happens all the time. But some people just live to criticize. Those are not the people for whom you balance their criticism. You measure that merit of their criticism. Is it worthwhile? Will it actually make me better? Will I be a better person for the people around me? Will I be a better leader, a better influencer? Will I improve the quality of my relationships by listening to that criticism and acting on it in a transformative way in myself? And if the answer is no, it only takes a few of those criticisms from somebody before you simply say, you know what? I appreciate that you're concerned for me. But I'm probably not going to take that advice. And for the future, I'd recommend that you just hold it or make note of it and send me an email. But I don't have time for these meetings to listen to the criticism because I don't feel like it's going to make a big difference for me or anybody else. That's a hard conversation to have. And it doesn't have to be a conversation that you have being a jerk. But it is a conversation you're going to have. Now, there are going to be those people who are not only qualified, but kind of required. Superiors, supervisors, peers of the same level, or board members, or customers, who have an opinion that you should listen to. Because if you don't, the consequences could be dire. You could lose your job, or in some cases, lose your company. In the book Woke Inc. by Vivek Ramaswamy, he talks about a time that his multi-billion, I believe at the time it's the net worth of the company was about $4.1 billion. That was their market cap. They had a town hall meeting, and they asked the CEO and founder of the company to apologize for a big litany of things that he had nothing to do with. He's like, I didn't do those things. I wasn't here when it happened. I mean, I founded the company. It hasn't happened in our company. It may be happening out in culture, but it's not happening here. And they said, we still want to see you apologize. And he said, I'm not going to do it. And the brouhaha within his organization became so hostile that even in a company he founded, his exit from the company he founded was the only way to save the jobs of the thousands of people that worked there. Otherwise, that faction of hostile criticizers would destroy it from the inside. They were like relational industrial termites. They just wanted to see it destroyed. I don't know how many of them loved their jobs or loved working there or still work there. I don't know the answer to that question. But I can't imagine that they were loyal to the organization or their friends or the people around them because their destructive nature would have left nothing in the wake. But they seemed to be satisfied when he resigned from his position as CEO of the company he founded and put somebody else in its place. That kind of criticizer, that kind of hater, they're really hard to deal with. It's also really hard to measure your own self, your self-awareness, your self-worth, your approach, when that's the kind of criticism you're having to measure against, because most of the time that kind of termite-style criticism, it's unwarranted, it's unmerited. And genuinely, there's nothing you could do to change you, to make you a better person, that would stave off that kind of destruction. That's not the kind of criticism I'm talking about. I'm also not talking about the criticism that's blatant and obvious that someone has an axe to grind or something else to gain. If they know that by you being humiliated and quieted and silenced and canceled that they get your job, they got way too much of a dog in the hunt for their criticism to be valid. Now, it doesn't mean that what they said isn't true. It doesn't mean that the behavior you exhibited that caused them to criticize you isn't true. You may need to take a look at that. But how you measure your response and whether or not you completely alter your way of life to accommodate this criticism, that's a whole different thing. It may be to them that this is your chink in the armor and that's going to be the easiest way to bring you down. This is your weak spot. This is the one that when they criticize this, you lose it emotionally. You're out of control. And sometimes that's all they need is that one soundbite of you losing control. That one video clip of you losing your temper, turning over a basket, flipping over a table. Sometimes that's enough. In this world of sound bites and media clips that can go viral in seconds, that's all it takes. Remember the lady on the airplane? Those people are not real? Yeah. Viral. Millions and millions of views. News stories, news reports, the whole thing. Whether or not it was a stunt to get attention, we don't know. She's a social media follower, but her following has gone up. Or excuse me, she's a social media influencer, and her followers have grown exponentially since that particular incident. I don't know if that was a stunt for the purpose of or not. I can tell you this, though. For those who are driven by being an influencer with lots of people watching, those who strive forward for that soundbite, that sound clip, that, hey, pay attention to me, they will do it at your expense at the drop of a hat. They are delighted to proverbially throw you under the bus if it will get them attention. They will criticize you. They will humiliate you. They will confront you. They will poke you in the eye in public and only film your response, not the poke in the eye. True story. Those are not the kind of people that you want to take criticism from. You have to hear it sometimes. You have to pay attention to it. And in all honesty, you probably should take some of their critique and measure it against the other things. It's like a reverse FAQ. You know, if you're getting the same question on a regular basis, maybe the question has some merit. Maybe the way you run your company hasn't been clear about how you address that issue. Maybe your marketing team or your PR team or your HR team should take some time to consider that question and answer it, address it, change a policy. Well, if you're getting the same criticism, both from people that you qualify to give you feedback and the haters outside in the public and the ones that are trying to take your company or take your job, maybe there's some merit to it. Maybe it's a worthwhile criticism. And even if you don't like the people who are criticizing you or the way that they're going about it or the things that they're saying, I get it. That's fair. But I also know that sometimes you've got to set all that stuff aside, sift through and go, where's the commonality? Am I being accused of something falsely altogether? Well, if we can't divert it, then we just have to dismiss it. But am I being accused of being a jerk, of speaking harshly, of replying to people, and not only from my outside haters, but from my inside cohorts, the people that I look to for advice? Then maybe that's something I need to take a look at. Maybe I need to consider the way that I talk to others. Maybe the way that I respond under pressure is, well, it's not good. And when you can be self-aware enough to say, okay, I give, I was wrong, I said the wrong thing, I behaved in the wrong way. Well, the next step is to be genuine about apologies. And then genuine about change. Transform yourself. Become a kinder person, a more gentle person, a more empathetic person. Think about the needs, the wants, the desires, the cravings of others. Ask yourself, how could I help them instead of put them down? Now, there's one last place that you've got to measure all of this criticism against. And that's the bottom line of successful production. If we have a company that everybody feels good, that's awesome. Yay! But if we have a company where everybody feels good and we're all broke, not so good. There's no yay. There's no yay. If you're celebrating everybody being happy and comfortable, it's called a birthday party. Not everybody's going to be happy and comfortable in a productive company. I hate to say that, but it's true. There are going to be people who just don't want to work as hard. They don't want to go along the same journey. I was listening to an entrepreneur the other day ask a really tough question. She said, when you consider your next level, where you're going to go next, you may have been surrounded by people who helped you get the company off the ground. They helped you to launch. They stood by you when you were broke. They loaned you money when your car was broke down. They fought through the very beginning with you like nobody's business. They are your soldiers. They are your warriors. They are your teammates. And as much as you care about them and they've demonstrated their care and concern for you, the truth is to take what you've got now to the next level, they can't go. They just can't go. They're not here for the long haul. They don't have the right attitude, the right aptitude, the right competencies. And as loyal as they have been, there's a place where their qualifications don't become an attribute of greater success. They become a dead weight. You're not using their momentum to carry your organization to the next level. You're dragging along a busted wheel. That's a hard truth. A self-aware leader is willing to measure those criticisms, those challenging relationships against the bottom line. Why? Well, because right now as an entrepreneurial launch, you may have 4 or 5 employees, 4 or 5 close friends, 4 or 5 loyal warriors, 4 or 5 people who would go to bat for you in a heartbeat. But if you take the company to the next level, you don't have 4 or 5 on your team, you have 4 or 500. And maybe when you get to that $10 million mark, you have 4 or 5,000 or 4 or 500,000. Now you're not just producing more revenue. It's not about the bottom line. While that's a really good way to make a decision, ask yourself, would you rather be someone who knows that you're providing income, opportunity, growth for 500,000 people or just for 5? If you could make an impact in an entire community, an entire state. You realize if you had 500,000 people working, you'd have a tenth of the state of Wyoming working for you. That's pretty significant. You're making an impact in a lot of people's lives, feeding a lot of babies whose parents may have otherwise been unemployed or standing in the unemployment line waiting for a handout. If you have the wherewithal to take a company from $100,000 a year to $1 million a year to $10 million a year to $100 million a year to $1 billion a year, do it. But understand along that way, you've got to be self-aware enough to know that your criticizers, some are polishing and sharpening and rubbing off the rough edges to make you better so you can lead better. And some, well, they're dead weight. They're jealous of your success and they don't care to see it. They're the crabs in the bottom of the barrel. Time to cut a hole in the bottom of the barrel and let them go. If you're a self-aware leader, it's not just about profit. It's not just about growth. It's not just about your own success. It's about how can you influence and improve the lives of people around you. A self-aware leader isn't just a better leader. They're a better human. Take the time to become self-aware. And if you need help with that, drop me a direct message on any social media platform and we can have a chat about it. I'm Jay Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.